All right, welcome to Indie Media On Air. My name is Chris Burnett, and today we have a special show for you. The first topic we're going to discuss is South Central Farmers, and we're going to get an update from Rosa Romero, who is with Axis of Justice and the South Central Farmers Support Committee. And then we're going to be speaking with James Fetzer, a distinguished McKnight University professor at the University of Minnesota, who will be talking with us about 9-1-1 and the challenging the official theories of what happened on 9-11. And we're going to start with Rosa Romero. Rosa, welcome to Indie Media On Air.
Well, hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Busy.
So why don't you tell us what's going on? What's actually happening? There's been a lot of activity in the last 3 or 4 days.
Basically, the sheriff dropped off an eviction notice on the property on 41st and Alameda, the South Central Farm, last Wednesday. And so basically what that means is that it gives us 5 days, which would be Monday night, until we'd be evicted off the property.
That's tonight at midnight?
That would be tonight, but then apparently the sheriff sent the wrong paper, so they had it reposted on Thursday, and now it's supposed to be midnight tomorrow. But it looks like we're working with our lawyers, and every single one of the farmers, over 300 families, are turning in appeal letters right now to the court. So we could be looking at earlier next week so the judge can look at their appeals.
So just to give people a little bit of background, South Central Farmers is a cooperative effort at 41st and Alameda in Los Angeles, which came together to grow food and all kinds of gardens and et cetera for a number of people. And a lot of those people use it for subsistence. They actually eat the food that they grow. And it's been around for, what, 12 years?
Yeah, it's been around for 13 years. Basically, after the 92 rebellion in Los Angeles, South LA needed ways to revitalize. And this vacant lot was full of trash. It was old tires, broken glass. And the community came in, cleaned it up, turned it into a community garden. And this isn't just, you know, a cute little garden project. This is families, the subsistence. This is how they live. They live off of this food. They feed their families, which is over it's 350 families, but you look at how many people are in their family and the larger community of their farmers markets. You're talking about feeding thousands of people from this largest urban garden in Los Angeles. Basically, what happened was the city sold this land in a backroom deal without any kind of community input back to the Brentwood real estate developer, Ralph Horowitz. And that's kind of where we're at right now. We're trying to fight for the land to be back for the community.
So what are the possible outcomes? What are the strategies being taken? What are you asking people to do?
Okay. Right now what we're trying to do is increase our pressure on city council, and we're trying to increase our visibility in Los Angeles. And ways that we're going to be doing that is we're asking everybody to call the mayor and let him know how you feel. And his number is 213-978-0611. And basically just talk about how you see South Central Farm and its importance in Los Angeles. And we need to increase our pressure on our elected officials, because he came and visited the garden during his election, but he hasn't been back since.
The number again is 213-978-0611.
So we're asking everyone to give a call today, tomorrow. Let's shut down the city council's phone system. We're also asking for people at 7 o'clock on Wednesday to come to the developer's place and see if he can bring down the price, because he got the land from the city for $5 million, and now he's asking the farmers for over $16 million. So we want to hold him accountable as well, and that's on the corner of Sunset and Woodburn, 7 p.m. on Wednesday. And we also will be having a drum circle at the mayor's house, 7 o'clock on Thursday. And then we're asking everyone to come and speak on behalf of the farmers during public comments, 9 a.m. at City Council on Friday, March 10th.
Friday, March 10th. Okay. So what is the time frame again? Are we looking at bulldozers coming in here and tearing up these gardens? What is the expected outcome if the City Council doesn't listen to the community?
The expected outcome is right now it's in the courts. The appeals are with the judges, and they get to decide if they're going to look at every single case of every farmer individually, which could take, it could extend it to 3 weeks. They could also choose to look at it all at 1 week, all together, and then we're looking at early next week.
And the city council is being asked to take action to intervene on this?
To intervene on a variety of fronts, including extending the time, maybe bargaining. They're in charge of LAPD and the sheriff, telling them maybe not to comply, as well as telling the developer to give more time for us to raise this money if that's what the city says that they're doing, as well as they could also void the sale, because in the original contract it said that if you knew that this, if either party knows that this deal is illegal, they have the right to void the contract. And there was a judge that ruled three times before this backroom deal happened, saying that it was illegal for the developer to purchase this public land.
Yeah, I want to encourage people to go down there. It's amazing. It's, what, 40 acres?
Yeah, it's 41 acres, and it's the largest urban garden in the United States. And I want to thank everybody for coming out the last few days. The rallying support that's been happening from all the citizens in Los Angeles has been wonderful. And I just want to thank everyone from the bottom of the hearts. And the farmers are very happy to have all this support. And you can see it in their eyes. The more and more people come out, the more they feel like the struggle is definitely a victory that Los Angeles is going to be proud of.
So let's go through this one more time just to clarify. First of all, is there a website that people can get updates on?
Yes, it's www.southcentralfarmers.com.
Southcentralfarmers.com.
Yeah, and you can get up-to-the-minute updates on what's going on, as well as join our email list. And then we definitely will give you emails, updates. You can also contact us at friendsofthefarm@mail.com.
Friendsofthefarm@mail.com.
Yes.
And also, I know LA Indie Media has done a lot of work supporting the struggle as well, so check out la.indiemedia.org too. So let's go through the schedule and locations one more time so we're clear on that.
Okay. Actually, tonight, if you're not busy, we're going to be having a film screening of different short films that have been made about the farm as well on Monday. Wednesday, we're looking 7 p.m. at Ralph Horowitz's Gated Community in Brentwood at the corner of Sunset and Woodburn Drive. On Thursday, we're looking 7 p.m. Drum Circle at the Mayoral Mansion at 605 South Irving Boulevard near the corner of Wilshire and Crenshaw. And on Friday, March 10th at 9 a.m. at L.A. City Council meeting, which is City Hall, which is on 200 North Spring Street.
Great. So everybody go to southcentralfarmers.org.
.com.
Okay. I'm going to get that wrong. Southcentralfarmers.com. And is there anything else that we need to know and let people know?
Just that your letters are making a big difference and your emails are making a huge difference. And if you can, drop by supplies as well. We're also looking at a long stay at the farm if we have to. And so bring water, canned goods, bring flashlights. Anything that you can, that you have, come on, bring into the farm. We'll gladly accept any donations.
Great. Well, Rosa, I want to thank you very much for giving us an update on South Central Farmers, and hopefully people go out there and support them. Check out the website and get involved.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Peace.
We'll be right back.
Do not attempt to adjust your radio dial. This is the Axis of Justice Radio Network.
It's time to stop singing and start swinging. Bow.
Join Tom Morell of Audioslave and Serge Tankian from System of a Down tonight at 7 p.m. when they once again tempt fate and the Office of Homeland Security with rebel jams and dangerous truths on the Axis of Justice Radio Network. Heard on your FM dial at 90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
Go nuts! Go crazy!
All right, welcome back to Indie Media On Air. And just a correction, Axis of Justice is on Friday at 7, and it's not tonight. Our next subject has to do with 911, and a lot of the issues surrounding 911, the investigations of it, and challenging the official theory. To join me to discuss this, we will have James Fetzer, distinguished McKnight University professor at the University of Minnesota Duluth, a member of Scholars for 911 Truth, which is st911.org. Since 1977, he has taught at a wide range of institutions of higher learning, including the Universities of Virginia, Cincinnati, North Carolina, Chapel Hill, New College of the University of South Florida, and now Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota, where he has been since 1987. His honors include a research fellowship from the National Science Foundation and the Medal of the University of Helsinki. In 1996, he became one of the first 10 faculty at the University of Minnesota to be appointed a Distinguished McKnight University Professor. He has published more than 100 articles and reviews and 20 books in the philosophy of science and on the theoretical foundations of computer science, artificial intelligence, and cognitive science. And I became familiar with Fetzer's work when I saw an article called Thinking About Conspiracy Theories, 9-1-1 and JFK. And quite honestly, the site Scholars for 9-1-1 Truth was very impressive, and that the work that they're doing there is detailed, it's careful, and the conclusions that they draw are based on a strong analysis of the evidence. And I'm very pleased to have James Fetzer online to join us on Indie Media on Air. Welcome to Indie Media on Air, Dr. Fetzer.
Thanks very much, Chris. Call me Jim.
Jim. Okay. Well, Jim, let's just start off with some basic stuff. What is Scholars for 9-1-1 Truth?
This is a group of experts and scholars who are dedicated to exposing falsehoods and revealing truths about 9/11. We have come together in common cause and belief that the government of our country has deceived and misled us about those events and may even have had a role in orchestrating them to promote its own political agenda.
Now, most of the public would be surprised to hear that the official story, the official theory, is being questioned. In fact, most people would consider the official theory to be official fact. How do you begin to approach this subject in a way that people would listen?
Well, the official story is just fine if you're willing to believe impossible things. The buildings were constructed to withstand the impact of the largest existing commercial airliners, which were Boeing 707s, very similar to the 767s. Frank DeMartini, who was a project manager, for example, said that the impact of an airliner would be analogous to sticking a pencil through mosquito netting, number one. So their load redistribution capabilities were such that they could absorb multiple impacts of airliners. Our government hasn't told us that. The melting point of steel, number two, is approximately 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, and yet the temperature, the maximum temperature for a fire burning jet fuel, which is kerosene-based, is only 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit under optimal conditions when it's fed pure oxygen. So there's a 1,000-degree difference between the highest temperature those fires could have reached and the melting point of steel. In fact, Underwriters Laboratory had certified the steel in these buildings for up to 6 hours at 2,000 degrees before they'd even significantly weaken. So since the fires only were present for less than an hour in the case of the Twin Towers 2, and only for about an hour and a half in the case of Twin Towers 1, they neither achieved the temperature nor the duration required to cause the metal to even melt. In fact, if the metal actually had melted, there would have been a very gradual, asymmetrical kind of sagging occurrence of one floor in relation to another. What happened was these buildings fell completely and totally all at once, straight downward, and that can only have happened given that they actually fell at the rate of free fall, point number three, if there was absolutely no resistance between those floors as they were coming down and the ground beneath them. In other words, the floors appear to have been blown out as they come down. And number four, there are actually two stunning smoking guns in this case. One is the massive billowing clouds of black smoke, which are indicative of an oxygen-depleted fire, which reflect the fact that those fires, jet kerosene fires, much of the fuel of which, by the way, was burned up on impact in those massive fireballs we saw as the planes exploded, were actually burning at a much lower temperature than their optimal, closer to 500 degrees Fahrenheit, according to the Underwriters Laboratory own estimate. But, and this is most important, fifth, those billowing clouds of smoke that were enveloping the buildings that even make it impossible to see exactly what's going on as those buildings come down not only include the projection of steel beams outward from the buildings, but in many cases even upwards as well, and represent the complete pulverization of the concrete material that was used for flooring, which had to require a massive source of energy. It cannot have been from the fires. It cannot have been from the impact of the planes. And it's certainly not a phenomenon that would occur if the one floor were pancaking on another, a process, by the way, which would take time. I offer the illustration, take a set of keys, if you will, and just stand over your floor and release the keys. If you start counting, say, 1,001, 1,002, you'll get about the word 1,000 out. In other words, it would take about a half second for a set of keys in free fall to fall from your hand to the floor. Well, if you assume that on the average those floors would take a half a second to collapse one on another, then since there were 110 of them, for the buildings to collapse completely should have taken approximately 55 seconds, or in other words, approximately 45 seconds more than actually took for those buildings to collapse.
Now, Jim, there's a lot of information in what you just went through, and I want to turn people onto the information at the website, because it goes into detail there. It's www.st911.org. That's st911.org. And everything that you described, I have seen, gone into detail there.
You're absolutely, Chris. Let me just point out that right at the top, there's a good place to start. Breaks you in very easily, a couple of press releases that identify the society, and then we give you some very accessible information about, for example, a video 9/11 revisited where explosives used that shows evidence that substantiates David Ray Griffin's celebrated lecture in Madison about these events, a study by Stephen Jones, a physicist at BYU, as he goes through the physics of the situation. You're going to find a lot of introductory material there. You're going to find a lot of audio evidence, video evidence. You're going to find the physics explained very simply. You're going to have access to a lot of interviews I've done on different programs. It's all available there.
Yeah, and in regards to Stephen Jones, let's talk about some of that evidence, because I was very pleased to see a member of the scientific community get involved in the science of the collapse of the two towers, and specifically the collapse of WTC-7, which was never struck by an aircraft. And Dr. Jones is a physicist at Brigham Young University who has gone and has written this paper, gone very systematically through the points, and he discusses issues having to do with the temperature at which metal would have to melt, or when you see the actual color charts based upon temperatures, that's carefully looked at. The physics of the buildings following is carefully looked at. And when I read that, I was frankly blown away by it. It was very detailed and very well documented.
Well, we have physicists, aeronautical engineers, pilots, mechanical engineers. We have just about every type of scientific expertise one might desire available here. And it's all laid out in great detail and at different levels of explanation. One of the reasons, incidentally, why the UL estimated that those fires would have been burning at relatively low temperatures is not just because they were oxygen depleted, but because the steel in the building had been coated with asbestos, which meant, of course, when all that tremendous, the buildings came down, the tremendous cloud enveloped lower Manhattan. That was toxic dust. It was laden with asbestos, with remnants of the explosive charges, with this fine powder from concrete that could coat the lungs. A large number of New Yorkers are right now suffering what I expect are going to be the terminal effects of having been exposed to that massive toxic cloud of dust, and yet our own EPA told New Yorkers that it was safe to breathe, which was absolutely completely false, and they had to know it was false at the time.
Some other points I think it's important to bring out is the fact that there's never been a collapse of a steel frame structure prior to 9/11 that resulted from fire. And
Oh, Chris, you're absolutely right. In the entire history of structural engineering, there has never been a steel structure, high-rise building, that has collapsed due to fire, nor has that happened since 9/11. And if our analysis is correct, in fact, it has never happened in history. That's merely the cover story the government is peddling. When you mention World Trade Center 7, that's a striking illustration of what was going on that day and how profoundly all of this has been covered up. That building was a 47-story building. building. It was extraordinarily well built over a massive electrical generator providing electricity for lower Manhattan. The beams in that building are probably the most massive steel support beams ever introduced into any building, short perhaps of some military bunker. It was extraordinary in its construction. A different style than the trade centers, but extraordinary. Even, if anything, more solidly built. The building was never hit by any aircraft whatsoever, only suffered from a couple of modest fires, should have been very easy control. Nevertheless, at 5:20 in the afternoon, during a conversation between Larry Silverstein, who leased the World Trade Center and who had insured it for something like $3.5 billion from terrorist attacks in about 3 months earlier, during a conversation with somebody he described as the fire commander, and his hesitation there suggests to me he also knew this guy by some other operational designation, told him, and this is in interviews, it's on tape, we can see him saying this and explaining that he did this, that maybe since there had been so much loss of life and damage and destruction, perhaps the best thing to do was to pull it. And he said they made that decision, we watched it pull. That's an expression in construction, of course, for bringing down by means of controlled demolition. You watch that building come down, there's a slight implosion toward the center, it comes perfectly straight down symmetrically into its own footprint. Free fall speed, if you dropped a bowling ball from the top of that building, would have been approximately 6 seconds. It came down in 6.6 seconds, and I attribute that lesser speed, that slightly slower speed, to the massiveness with which the building was constructed. Now, just to show you how badly the government has misled the American people, there's not a word about the collapse of World Trade Center 7 in the 9/11 Commission report. If people want to begin to understand how their government has been misleading them about this, that commission report is highly analogous to the Warren Commission report on the death of Jack Kennedy. I have spent over a decade studying the death of Jack Kennedy, and I can assure you every conclusion drawn by the Warren Commission report is false. And I assert to you in a comparable way, every fundamental conclusion drawn by the 9/11 Commission report that you've been told by your government is false. They're not only false, they're provably false, and in most cases they're not even physically possible, meaning they violate laws of nature. The temperature of steel is not Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative. There's no way in which attitudes affect it. The highest melting point of kerosene-based jet fuel is something that over which no person has any control. There was a 1,000-point discrepancy. There was not the exposure of the steel to a long enough period of time to cause it to sag or to weaken, which would have led to a very different type of collapse. And indeed, since those fires were only located in a small number of regions on those floors, it would have required the steel throughout each floor to simultaneously melt or collapse, which, of course, is inexplicable on any hypothesis other than controlled demolitions were at work here.
And I want to interject and point out to people, and based upon what I was reading, is that the actual process by which controlled demolition takes place is a very intricate one, and is actually something that a few companies are only willing to try to actually do and fulfill in bringing a building down in its footprint.
Chris, you're absolutely right. And the fact that World Trade Center 7 came down by controlled demolition implies the presence, the pre-existence of those demolitions, those charges in World Trade Center 7. Some people ask, well, how could this have been done in relation to the North and South Towers? But the fact is there were very odd security lapses in the 2 weeks leading up to 9/11. Major sections of the building were shut off. Employees were told to go home. The cameras were turned off. And teams of described as engineers were going in and out of those buildings. Now, Stephen Jones, the physicist from BYU, calculates that the explosive used here appears to have been this extraordinarily powerful steel cutter called thermate, which is thermite supplemented by sulfur. It even appears to be an enhanced version of thermate that is supplemented by nanotechnology, so that it reaches like temperatures in excess of 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit and even has the capacity to evaporate iron. This is very striking on two counts. One is that Steve has estimated that a team of 40 men making 10 trips apiece could probably have implanted sufficient thermate to bring the buildings down. And second of all, that there were these massive pools of molten metal in the sub-basements. This is 5, 6, 7 sub-basements below ground level that were still molten 4, 5, and 6 weeks later. That required an incredible source of energy that could not have been affected by the mere collapse of those buildings.
Now, It's inevitable when talking about this subject that we have to talk about the term conspiracy theory, and often used in derogatory implications. And I've heard other analysts say that the term conspiracy theory is used consciously by people in positions of power to discredit institutional analyses that would shed light on systemic trends and behaviors.
Well, the fact is that conspiracies are as American as apple pie. When two guys knock off a 7-Eleven, they're engaging in a conspiracy, because all a conspiracy requires is two or more persons engaging together for the sake of an illegal act. So when Martha Stewart goes to jail for insider trading, that's a conspiracy. When Tom DeLay is being prosecuted for money laundering and bribery, that's conspiracy. Similar for Bill Frist, insider trading. Similar for Jack Abramoff. This is a massive bribery on a huge scale that threatens a huge number of politicians in Washington, D.C. Now, the fact of the matter is most American conspiracies tend to be economic, like Enron, WorldCom, and now Halliburton in Iraq, as it rakes in hundreds of billions of dollars and feeds our troops spoiled food. I mean, this is absolutely disgusting, but this is what the Bush administration considers to be supporting our troops. Now, the fact of the matter is that the government's own account involving 19 Islamic fundamentalists who hijacked four planes under control of an Osama bin Laden off in some cave in Afghanistan is obviously a conspiracy theory. So since the government's own theory of what happened on 9/11 is a conspiracy theory, I hardly see how they can fault those of us who have looked at their theory, found it to be wanting, provably false, not even physically possible, and think that something is wrong.
You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara and on the web at kpfk.org. This is Indie Media On Air. I'm Chris Burnett, and I'm speaking with Professor James Fetzer of the University of Minnesota Duluth, a member of Scholars for 911 Truth. That's www.st911.org. And we are discussing some of the evidence and analyses that have been taken upon by many scientists and many others and many scholars who are analyzing this evidence and drawing completely different conclusions. Jim, what has been the response from folks to the conclusions being drawn by scholars for 911 Truth?
Oh, as soon as they hear, as soon as they begin to appreciate the evidence, Chris, they're extraordinarily shocked and dismayed, but also gratified that they're finally hearing a clear explanation of what actually happened. I mean, I'll tell you how bad it is. Two really important books anyone there who wants to follow up on this may want to pursue are written by David Ray Griffin, who's a prominent theologian from the Claremont Graduate School, so he's right there in Southern California. One is entitled The New Pearl Harbor, where he talks about the political motivation of this administration to have a precipitating event they could use to manipulate the American people by instilling them with fear so that they would support projects to project American power around the world, projects that they all agreed the American people would never support because they're so incredibly costly and because of the human toll in the sons and daughters that would be sent to war. This is all laid out in the Project for the New American Century, which you can find online. It has about 24 signatories, including about a dozen, including Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Condoleezza Rice, Dick Cheney, even Jeb Bush, and others who became prominent members of the Bush administration and who have moved their agenda forward. It's a highly ideological agenda. It pays scant attention to the realities on the ground, as in the case of Iraq, but it gives you an explanation, a blueprint for the foreign policy they have been pursuing, which is based in part on ideology and in part on doing everything they can to benefit American corporations as part and parcel of globalization, where national boundaries and national laws no longer mean anything. But the second book of David Ray Griffin is a dissection of the book, the 9/11 Commission Report. And the very first point he makes is that 4, 5, or 6, and it may be 7, 8, or 9, of these alleged hijackers have turned up alive and well in Saudi Arabia. Now, I presume I don't need to emphasize that if these hijackers were killed in these plane crashes, then they cannot also be alive and well living
in Saudi Arabia. That was a report on BBC, as I recall.
Well, there are multiple sources. No, it's not just BBC. There's an awful lot if you go to the website, st911.org. Go to the website and check out, for example, our resources page. And on the resources page, you'll not only see multiple studies about the location, you know, that some of these hijackers are still alive, but also that the cell phone calls were impossible, that it wasn't even electronically possible to make those cell phone calls from those aircraft, which means those cell phone calls were faked and staged, which gives you some idea of the kind of forethought that went into planning this whole exercise, and that these hijackers could not possibly have flown these planes. I mean, these hijackers were modestly qualified at best. They would have trouble piloting a little Cessna or a Piper Cub. I have extremely qualified people, pilots who are also aeronautical engineers, dissecting the impossibility as a practical matter of them having piloted the planes. The whole thing, the whole story is a sham, and it's completely disgusting because they have betrayed the United States. They betrayed you. They have betrayed me. They have betrayed the entire country, and they are doing so for the sake of manipulating us based on acts of violence and acts of fear to instill us with apprehension and concern so that they can manipulate us. And if anyone bothers to look up in the dictionary, the individuals or groups who use acts of violence or threats of acts of violence to instill fear into a population in order to manipulate them for political purposes has a name, and the name is terrorist.
I want to remind listeners that the two books that were mentioned earlier was The New Pearl Harbor by David Rigg Griffin and 911 Commission Report, A Dissection. Also, if you do a search for a project for the New American Century, it's a public document. You can read what Jim was referring to. Jim, why do you think that most scientists, structural engineers, physicists, et cetera, remain silent on this subject?
Well, that's a great question, Chris. I hope they're not just frightened to death that they're going to lose their jobs. But, you know, I mean, the kind of government we have right now was well described by a fellow named Mussolini, who said that corporatism could be defined as the merger of big government with big business, that it's typified by nationalism and militarism, that there's a tendency to identify the leader with the state, where any criticism of the leader is treated as unpatriotic or even treasonous. I hate to think it's true, but an awful lot of corporations are making an awful lot of money based upon the policies of this administration. And even if this administration has done unconstitutional, illegal, even criminal acts, it may be those corporations are very happy to have their pockets fattened regardless of the immorality of the situation, such that their employees, if they become whistleblowers, may be treated very severely. Anyone who studies the history of this administration will notice that the only persons who were ever punished or fired or fined or reprimanded are those who try to tell the truth. No one, based upon the events of 9/11, was reprimanded or fired or demoted or in any other way punished. The only ones who have felt the brunt of the Bush administration have been those who tried to speak the truth. Most stunningly, of course, Joseph Wilson, the former ambassador who went to Niger and exposed the charade about Saddam Hussein trying to seek yellow cake to build nuclear weapons, whose wife, Valerie Plame, was outed by this administration. This, of course, is the subject of Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation. What most Americans don't realize is Valerie Plame was in charge of a covert network that was working to inhibit the proliferation of nuclear weapons. Let me repeat that. Valerie Plame was in charge of a covert network that was working to inhibit the proliferation of nuclear weapons. It is my opinion that she was probably in charge of the single most important underground network in relation to American security that exists in the entire arsenal of our intelligence agencies, and yet they were willing to out her, destroy that network. Almost certainly, many members of that network were killed, and its efficacy was destroyed. George Tenet wrote an analysis about how much damage was done, and Porter Gross, our new head of Central Intelligence, won't release it. The American people are entitled to know. This is very destructive. For an administration that claims to stand up for American security, this is completely ridiculous. I mean, the very idea that those planes could have hit those buildings on that day without having been interdicted by American fighter aircraft required special measures to constrain them. If ordinary standard operating procedures had been followed, those planes could never have hit those buildings. Well, those atrocities could never have been committed.
You know, you mentioned earlier about going after the whistleblowers. Well, that's obviously the case even in the current wiretapping fiasco, where they're going after people who leaked the information instead of dealing with the public outcry against the wiretapping.
Chris, it's completely disgusting. These people are anti-democratic. They don't believe in the Constitution. They are subverting democracy. They are betraying the principle of this country. I cannot understand why any principled Republican would support this administration. As I was growing up, and I was born in Pasadena, so I care about Southern California, my father taught me how there were four principles that defined Republicanism. One was balanced budgets, another was constitutional government, a third was a non-interventionist foreign policy, a fourth was keeping government out of our personal lives, a fifth, if I were to add one, would be states' rights. This administration violates everyone, running up the most massive deficits in history, undermining the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment now, and they're doing more and more through the Patriot Act, attacking other countries as a preventative measure. It's ironic that the same rationale that Bush used for invading Iraq, namely that he viewed them as a potential threat to our national security, was the rationale that Emperor Hirohito used in attacking Pearl Harbor, so that if Hirohito's attack on Pearl Harbor, if 7 December 1941 was a day that will live in infamy, then historians are going to have to conclude, draw similar conclusions about the American attack on Iraq. It's all shameless, shameful. And, of course, the idea of keeping government out of our personal lives, they're surveying every damn phone call we make. I mean, people don't seem to understand that they claim they're only going after the terrorists, but they don't know who the terrorists are until they listen to every phone call. And then they use this data mining technique to screen it all, to figure out who are the people they want to go after. If they actually knew who the people were they wanted to go after, they could get warrants and they could do it in a legal way. Donald Rumsfeld himself has admitted that he continues to do these things, even when he's told by the Congress that they don't want them to do these things, which include, for example, planting phony stories in newspapers abroad so that they can, use the techniques of propaganda to shape world opinion. But I guarantee you, they're using those same techniques at home. So they're using the techniques of propaganda. They're using the techniques of terrorism on the American people. I'm telling you, we have to wake up because the American government is at war with the American people.
On that note, I want to give out a phone number for listeners to call in. It's 818-985-5735, and join the discussion and ask some questions of Jim Fetzer. And one of the things that you said earlier that really stuck with me is when we're talking about these ideas, you went through about five really points at the beginning of the discussion, and it's a lot of information to take in, and there's a lot of disinformation out there, I think, when it comes to discussing these alternative theories, and I think there's a lot of carelessness. And one of the reasons I was struck by Scholars for 9-1 Truth is that there were very careful analysis, and I was also I was pleased to see Dr. Jones' analysis, someone who actually voted for Bush and was a Republican, come out and look at the evidence and the facts on the table.
Oh, Chris, we have individuals of every political persuasion. For example, there's a piece you'll find there by Morgan Reynolds, who was the chief economist for the Department of Labor in the administration of George W. Bush, who's concluded that we have been lied to. We have a lot of famous people. If you go down our list of who are we, you'll find a number of notable individuals. Apart from Morgan, Webster Tarpley is included. A famous German politician figure is among our members. Andreas von Bülow, who used to be the head of science and technology for Germany and the head of the German Secret Service. There are multiple persons. John McMurtry, who's a professor of philosophy, a member of the Royal Society of Canada, who's published six books dealing with public policy issues. Go ahead and scan through our membership list and see what you think, because I want you to understand we are all doing this because we believe in it. We have no funding. We're all doing this by contributing our own time and our own effort to bringing the truth to the American people. We have no political axe to grind. And if we believe that this administration is complicit in major crimes against the American people, it's because we have been forced to that conclusion by the evidence and by the principles of scientific reasoning.
And that's really the key. And I think that that is what's going to hold the most force when dealing with this issue, is actually having a scientific background. I come from a scientific background, and I was waiting for something like this to happen because, you know, the circumstantial evidence surrounding what happened, you know, from day one, I was a little skeptical. And over the years, just hearing, you know, anecdotes, you begin to question the official theory and then you put the pieces together. But we really need, you know, very strong scientific principles applied to the evidence that are happening, happened on 9/11.
It just so happens that in addition to being a former Marine Corps officer, that I have a PhD in the history of science and the philosophy of science. I have taught logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning for 35 years. So that when I have spent this huge amount of time analyzing the death of JFK, so many different techniques of obfuscation, fabrication, recreation of evidence, suppressing witnesses and all that took place in that case. It was a marvelous training ground for turning to 9/11. In fact, 9/11 compared to JFK, frankly, is a piece of cake. The physics is so elementary, it's really basically at a high school level. I mean, you cannot, once you grasp the concept of a law of nature, you cannot fail to appreciate that the government's account violates natural laws and therefore cannot possibly be true. I cannot emphasize this enough. The government account is not in the area of probability where it's merely improbable, as in the case of the alleged magic bullet that went through Jack's back of his neck and transited his throat without hitting any bony structures. It's not even physically possible. In fact, the magic bullet theory isn't even physically possible because cervical vertebrae intervene. So that, you know, the government has been peddling this horse manure to the American people for an awful long time. I mean, it's really taking us nearly 40 years to establish objective scientific evidence that Jack was killed as the result of a meticulous conspiracy and a very carefully executed cover-up. In this case, we can't afford to wait that long because this administration is using these events to manipulate us, to turn our country inside out, inside out.
Jim, we're going to go and take some callers' questions. Amy from Ventura, welcome to Indie Media On Air. Do you have a comment or question for Jim?
A little of both. Okay. Just greetings to you in Duluth. And I figure the administration has disregarded other laws, why not the laws of nature, unfortunately. And I'm grateful for your courage to speak out and wonder, how do you and your colleagues protect yourselves from the administration and their allies? And also, how do we continue to get the word out to hopefully get more people involved to hopefully replace this administration?
Well, I appreciate all that. Alas, we're just as vulnerable as anyone else. They know where we are. I'm sure we're right at the top of their list when it comes to surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't have any doubt about it. It's a question of whether you believe the stakes are great enough that you're willing to run the risks that entails. Now, your second question is terribly important. You must share the word. Get other people. Just tell them you've tripped over this website, ST for Scholars for Truth, ST911.org. You're troubled by it. You want to know what they think. If you have the opportunity to get copies of some of these DVDs, like Loose Change, second edition, for example, and get them on your local community access television. Get the word out any way you can. Frankly, the situation is one where the president, the vice president, the secretary of defense, others in this administration deserve to be impeached. They should be taken out of office. But because we're suffering from a one-party rule, the consequences here make that almost impossible, practically speaking. I'm actually worried that if it were to be the case that the Congress were to bring an impeachment action against these people, that they might want to use the American military against the American people. That's my greatest fear. In the meanwhile, the Congress has to be completely reconstituted. Any congressman who's been supporting this Bush administration in relation to these wars and the use of electronic voting machines and cutting all of the environmental protections, I mean, frankly, the future of the entire species is even put in jeopardy by this administration's ruthless determination to maximize profits for corporations around the world. The Congress needs to be reconstituted, but, and this is absolutely crucial, it can't be done unless we get rid of these electronic voting machines. I was absolutely stunned to read a piece that I've just put up that says on March 3rd about how a couple weeks ago an obscure unelected Republican appointed official in California decided the future of the world because the Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson, overrode the objections of his own experts to certify Diebold voting machines for use in the state. And this is notwithstanding the fact that those machines are easily hackable. I spend a lot of time on computer science, artificial intelligence, and I'll tell you, there's nothing proprietary about the simple programs that are used to count votes. It's about as simple as they come. You take a number N and you add one to it to produce a new number N1. So any company that is insisting that their software is proprietary in relation to votes is lying to your face, and that this Secretary of State should have had the nerve to certify these machines, given the evidence he had at his disposal, shows that he is betraying the people of the United States. Now, I don't know about his personal motivation, but it must be profound, because this is an absolute act of the most unscrupulous and corrupt variety. And I hope there's enough brain power and enough legal talent out there in California that you can do something about it, because this article I'm reading about is explaining how this is going to guarantee that the election of 2008 is already settled, because California's block of votes is going to be preordained to go to the Republicans, which of course would be startling historically, but which they can pull off using these voting machines. That article, I'm sorry to say, was not one I read in the Los Angeles Times. It was one I read in the Moscow Times.
Jim, we're going to go to another call. Amy, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much, and thank you for courage.
Greg in Santa Monica, welcome to Indie Media on Air. You have a question?
Yes. Well, a little bit of both. I just want to say, Jim Fetzer, you're one of the most eloquent people on the subject. I was wondering if you could perhaps get involved in discussing AIPAC's role in, say, the ratcheting up of rhetoric against Iran right now. John Bolton just spoke to 4,500 delegates of AIPAC and basically is just ratcheting up the rhetoric like Iran definitely has, you know, a weapons program. And you know, the Atomic Agency already has said that there's no clear evidence. It sounds like a lot of rhetoric. What do you think?
Well, it's clearly rhetoric, and it is the same pattern. And, you know, Bush stumbles over the phrase, but they say, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Do we not know any more about this administration? I mean, this Condoleezza Rice, for example, now our Secretary of State told us no one could have ever imagined using these airplanes as missiles, as weapons. Well, a year before, the Pentagon had had a simulation of a Boeing 757 hitting the Pentagon, and that very morning, four or five different kinds of terrorist attacks were being conducted that were under the supervision of Vice President Cheney. And just to tell you how shameless it was, Norman Mineta, our Secretary of Transportation, was there observing him as a young officer came over to him and said repeatedly, it's 50 miles out, sir, it's 40 miles out, sir, it's 30 miles out, sir, do the orders still stand, sir? And Cheney's turned around on him and nearly bit off his head and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything different? Well, Mineta didn't know quite what he was listening to, but it was the plane approaching the Pentagon, and the order had to be not to shoot the plane down. After all, if they'd wanted the plane to be shot down, it would have been shot down. The Pentagon is one of the most heavily defended buildings in the world. You don't think those brass hats with $400 billion or so to play with are not going to make sure that they are highly defended. Now, this story, which Mineta told to the 9/11 Commission, they somehow neglected to include in their 9/11 Commission report. What's going on here is manipulating the American people, putting John Bolton into the United Nations when the man despises the United Nations was an act of absolute corruption by this administration, total hypocrisy. So putting this guy in a position where he has this bully pulpit to try to instill fear into us. Scott Ritter yesterday, and he was one of the most qualified of all the United Nations inspectors, has said that Iran is years and years and years away from having nuclear weapons, and that in fact the type of processing they're doing is not the sort that will lead to the production of atomic weapons. So what is going on? I think just as going into Iraq was motivated by ideology, it was motivated by Israel, which had a legitimate beef with Saddam Hussein because he was paying $25,000 bounties to these suicide bombers, but also to exploit Iraqi oil, which I have no doubt we are pumping out in massive quantities off of the meter, is going to be intended to steal from Iran this small sliver of land that controls 80%,
Jim,
90% of their oil reserves that are immediately adjacent to Iraq. I think,
Jim, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I do want to get a couple more callers on the phone because we only have 6 minutes left.
You got it, Chris.
Greg, thank you for your call, and we're going to ask Jessica. Welcome to Indie Media on Air. Do you have any questions or comments?
I wanted to ask, it's actually touching on this subject, about the Iranian oil bourse, which should be coming around sometime soon.
That's a brilliant point, that the Iran wants to switch to the petro-euro, which is to decouple oil and the dollar. The dollar right now is artificially supported by being linked to the price of oil. I mean, in the old days, we used to have the gold standard, so you could convert dollar bills in terms of gold. Then we had the silver standard. Then we had Federal Reserve notes that were sort of free-floating. Today, because oil is bought and sold in terms of dollars, there's a form of an artificial platform that supports the value of the American dollar. Iran wants to go to the euro as its base. Iraq wanted to go to the euro and may even have already done so. Syria wants to go to the euro. Venezuela wants to go to the euro. And just look at what countries are in the sights of our weapons. It's precisely those countries. And, of course, anyone who knows about the history of Afghanistan realizes we weren't just there chasing after these alleged Taliban bad guys, but we were there to make sure that an oil pipeline for UNICAL could be built across the north end of the country. If you look where our big base is now, they just happen to be on the pipeline route. Our ambassador to Afghanistan with the Taliban had told them that if they would allow the pipeline to be built, we would bathe them in gold, and if not, we would bathe them in bombs. They didn't, and we did, and now the president of Afghanistan is a former UNICAL company official, and our ambassador to Afghanistan is another.
All right, Jessica, thank you for
your
question. We're going to move on. And for those who want to ask questions and we may not have time for, you can go to the website st911.org and probably send off an email very easily. Yasser, welcome to Indie Media on Air. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I only have one problem. My problem is that there's too much talk about this administration, and we need to keep in mind that a lot of what's been going on in the world could not have occurred without Democratic support. In fact, the Patriot Act was sitting on Bill Clinton's shelf after the Oklahoma City bombing, and essentially the Republicans just picked it up and in fact pushed it through after the September 11th attacks. And there's a lot of people that hear David Ray Griffin and hear yourself, Professor, which is, I'm so glad that you're coming to speak out and go out and end up voting Democratic because they're the lesser of two evils. But people need to realize that, you know, Barack Obama called for missile strikes against Iran. Every Democrat has supported a war against Iran. It's not just the Bush administration.
Yeah, sir, we got your point about the Bush, yeah. The Democrats, Republicans.
I don't understand why the Democrats in Congress are a bunch of spineless wimps, but I'm completely disgusted with them. I will simply reiterate, however, that you're responsible for what happens during your administration. This administration began with massive tax cuts for the rich that were predicated on telescoping surpluses, just the way Enron telescoped profits, treating these massive surpluses the Clinton administration had set us on a trajectory to achieve as though they were already money in hand. It has been well said that if we had not made those massive tax cuts for the rich, that our budget would basically be in budget in balance, apart from the expense of conducting these wars, which has all been done off of the table. We would not have withdrawn from the Kyoto Accords, which are threatening the entire species with global warming. The effects are all around us. We would not have had attempts to stack the Supreme Court. We would not have had wars in Iraq. We would not have had, I'm convinced of this, the 9/11 attacks. This government, the evidence shows, orchestrated those attacks, and it's now using it to systematically mislead the American people in order to promote its own political agenda. The evidence is there. The evidence is chilling.
Yes, sir. I want to thank you for your question. Jim, we've only got about a minute and a half left, and I want to ask you your final thoughts and what would you like to say, and where do we go from here?
Well, what I like to say is we have to reclaim control of our country, and it isn't going to be easy. I'm afraid that this government is doing a lot of things that are very unnerving for those who take the long look. What is our National Guard doing in Iraq, after all? Look at Katrina. They sent the 82nd Airborne into Katrina. The National Guard is trained to cope with natural disasters. The 82nd Airborne is trained to kill. So what was the Airborne doing in New Orleans and the National Guard in Iraq? Having the National Guard in Iraq is weakening the National Guard all over the country. That means the states, in terms of their capacity to withstand an intrusion by the federal government, would be severely weakened by the acts this federal government is taking quite deliberately. We must maintain the Posse Comitatus Act and not allow the federal government to start sending troops into American cities. My greatest apprehension is they're going to use another phony terrorist attack to suspend the Constitution and to turn this into a military police state. And I hate to say these things, and I want to remind you, I'm a former Marine Corps officer. I published some 27 books. I care about my country, and the evidence, I'm sorry to say, has led me to these very pessimistic, very dismal, very chilling conclusions.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you for speaking out and writing on this subject, and everybody at ST911.org. And I really want to encourage people to investigate this material and take a close look at it and, you know, be critical and ask very difficult questions. And that's what it's for. Thank you very much for joining us today on Indie Media On Air.
Thank you so much, Chris.
I want to thank engineer D'Angelo Jones, producer Alan Minsky, guest Rosa Romero, and, of course, Professor James Fetzer. And to call Villaraigosa to support the South Central Farmers, the number is 213-978-0611. That's 213-978-0611. And go to st911.org. Thanks.
You've been listening to Indie Media On Air on your revolutionary station, KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara County, and streaming globally at kpfk.org. The Voices from the Frontline edition of the 4 o'clock report is coming up next. Stay tuned.
Join us on International Women's Day, March 8th, as Pacifica Radio presents an audio tapestry of women's voices from around the world. From the front lines of Palestine to the gates of death row, we'll hear women telling their stories through music and theater, giving us news and information. Stay with us as we highlight the struggles and achievements of women across the globe as we celebrate women's rights and place in the world.